Welcome to another episode of Connected with the Toms. I'm Julie, your trauma-informed movement coach, coming to you from beautiful Ontario, Canada.
This is Dr. Tom coming to you once again from the sunny and never rain gonna rain here for months, Arizona.
I love how you like throw that in there. Just, it's not ever gonna rain here. Well, it's been raining here, and we got all the seasons here in Canada, but if you are new here, we are a father-daughter duo here to share some experiences and our knowledge that we've acquired over the last 70 plus years to help working with people just like you. So today we're going to be diving into the world of cholesterol. What do you need to know? And but before I do that, a couple things is I want to mention my dad and I are very excited that we're going to be getting together and offering a in-person workshop at the Omega Institute in Rhinebeck, New York, October 25th to 27th. So I'll let my dad talk a little bit about what we're going to do. Yeah, I look forward to seeing everybody there. But dad, what are we going to be doing at this workshop?
Omega Retreat is a retreat center that has been there for many years that they offer weekend workshops, but people come through the week also. And what we're going to be talking about is the aspects of the effects of trauma on chronic illness and how the manifestation of trauma comes in different forms, different avenues, causing our learned perceptions of how we respond as we go through life. And so I'll be doing some of the clinical stuff, and Julie will be adding the hands-on stuff, the participation part, we'll say, because this is not just sit and listen to us lecture. This is actually going to be much more participation, because our goal is that when you leave on Sunday afternoon, there will be the aspect of you will have tools that will be helpful and utilization not only for yourself, but you'll be able to share with your family and friends. Because this is the type of thing. Stress, as we talk about pretty much in every podcast, including the one probably today, because it always comes up as a component of, what can we do to support you in your everyday life? That doesn't mean you have to take another pill, but it's more about how do you engage, your day-to-day living and live a high your highest expectation and your highest quality of life, which is our goal for everyone.
Yes. So basically, my dad does the theory and I get to do the fun trauma-informed movement snacks. So you're going to go home with a big bucket of trauma-informed movement snacks for you to apply. And I will say dancing will be optional, but highly recommended. So come if you want to come, if you want to like, ah, I want to come play with your inner child and let your inner child play. Come play with us on October 25th, 27th of this year at the Omega Institute. You can go to omega.org to learn more and to sign up and secure your spot. Cool. So next thing on the list is we're going to shift you in a parasympathetic state. So the exercise, so again, if you're a first time here, what I like to do is offer you a breathing drill to, because my dad is gonna share a lot of amazing information. So before, to get your brain turned on, getting out of protection and connection, I'm gonna help put you into that connective piece and get you breathing a little bit slower, a little bit calmer right now. So we're gonna do a breathing drill called cake breathing. So the reason I'm doing this one is I just finished celebrating 3 kids' birthdays in the month of April. Holy moly. Lots of cake, lots of celebrations, and this was a good reminder because if you've ever had 10-year-old twins, if you ever had a 10-year-old at a birthday or 5 10-year-old girls over for a sleepover, you know you're gonna have to do some breathing, and this is a really good one. So what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna show you this breathing drill that I did. It's fantastic. I love it. It's really simple, it's playful. But basically what you're gonna do is you're just gonna take your hands, and what I want you to do is just start rubbing your hands together first and foremost. And then what I want you to do is just gonna open up your hands, and I want you to imagine your favorite birthday cake. Just imagine your absolute, what's the flavor that you're that cake? And all I want you to do is smell in your hands, take a deep breath in, and then all I want you to do is blow out the candles, which are your fingers. Blow on all your fingers. Blow out the candles, blow it out, blow them out, get them all out, get them all out, get them all out. Come on, come on, come on. Good job. All right. First try. Now we're going to do the second one. Okay. So I want you to again really think about smelling your favorite smell. Like get that strawberry shortcake or the vanilla cake or the chocolate, whatever. Or maybe it's even ice cream cake. I don't know. Ready? Go ahead and sniff your hands. And big blowout. Blowout. Right on every single one of your fingers, blowing out those candles. You can even wiggle those fingers and see just like the flicker of a candle. All right, one more time because we always do things in threes, one for you, one for yin, and one for yang. Ready? Last time, inhale and blow them out. And there you go. I really wish that you guys could see my dad doing this because it was awesome. It's so cool for me to see people do this stuff because it's like, how did that feel for you, Dad? That feel a little bit, is it fun? Playful?
It's always fun and playful. I mean, all these different types of things. And even the one I was, as I was doing a walk this morning, I was practicing the horse one.
There
And
you go.
when people were walking by, I stopped because I didn't want them to think I was going crazy.
I've done that. People do that. I'm like, I'm that weirdo, but I don't care because it's in the name of my own health. But that's awesome. And that's the thing. That's where you apply it. There's different places, different things. But that one's a really fantastic one. A, because of the energy of your hands and the temperature. So we have a lot of things going on. And then just the imagination of what's going on, it brings you into the moment. And then you can, when you slow down, like blow out your obviously, longer exhale, you get into a parasympathetic state. So that's why it's so, I like it. It's fun. It's very playful. Yeah, and a good one, especially with the birthday party. So there you go. And I know my dad wanted to mention something that's come up for him with breathing in terms of how we can like take this to the another a next level. So if you've been here for the last, I don't know, 10, 12 podcasts or so, we've been breathing together, different styles, but there's something else you can layer up too. So dad, what is it?
You know, it's breathing is something that since you basically came into the world, you've been doing most of it, of course, is unconscious. But you know, post-pandemic, the idea of breathing and meditation has sort of risen to the fore because of the amount of stress. But something that has even come up even more recently with my patient population and just you know for myself is that I've changed my recommendations of far about breathing. I used to tell people, you know, do 100 deep breaths a day. Throughout the day, sitting at a stoplight, standing in line at the bank or the grocery store, et cetera. But I've changed that now to basically be an activity where I say every hour, I want you to stand up for 1 minute. And in that 1 minute, you take your favorite breathing technique and do four repetitions of that. Generally speaking, you know, we'll say it will fill the whole minute. And what we're attempting to do is to take a standing, which is a sympathetic dominant activity, and train the brain to make it a parasympathetic activity. And I was teaching a seminar last weekend, and one of the participants said, "Oh, that's what Wim Hof is doing also, and with his cold plunging, is he's taking a very sympathetic dominant activity like going into cold water, which is a stress on the body, and you know a lot of reactions, and he's trying to train the brain to become parasympathetic, so the body doesn't have to respond, doesn't have to react." And the goal will be then, not only with breathing, but with other activities, that when your body does feel stress, it doesn't have to immediately go into the flight fright, you know, release adrenaline and then release cortisol. And we get all the physiologic effects that we've talked about in a previous podcast about when we talked about stress and fatigue and adrenal failure, et cetera, et cetera. So, new technique, making your breathing even more effective. Stand up when you're doing it 1 minute every hour through the day, and over time, the goal is to retrain this and your brain so that you can be in a much more common, not just when you're eating, not just when you're sleeping, you can be parasympathetic, but you can be chain your body to be parasympathetic in what is typically felt to be a sympathetic dominant activity.
Awesome. Yeah. So it's habit stacking, right? So you start with some basic breathing, and then we're going to habit stack it and basically apply it to shifting your sh building resilience. Sounds like is basically what it's all about, right? So I mean, I'm a big Wim Hof fan, but for the people that I've been working with, many of us are already stressed out. So going to cold plunge is almost too stressful. So just being able to stand up is a simple way to, move that dial a little bit and support you, and start, applying and building your window of tolerance or rebuilding your stress bucket, making a little bit bigger. So that's awesome. So thank you, Dad. Thank you for sharing that. Okay. Without further ado, let's dive into the world of cholesterol. And I know this has been a big topic for you and your community, Dad. So I'll let you talk a little bit about what's showing up for you in your world, and then I'll talk about it from me, from the emotional and the from the emotion aspect, like what emotions could be linked to our cholesterol. So I'll talk a little bit about that later on. So all right, go ahead, Dad.
The aspect of cholesterol, it's obviously a word that you would have to be living on the moon to not know what cholesterol is about. It is in the news. There's lots of advertising about it, but I think there's also a lot of misconceptions about cholesterol. Cholesterol, if you just if you, I will say, if we ask a layperson, what do you know about cholesterol? 99% of the people are going to say, oh, it causes heart disease, it causes people to have a stroke, causes atherosclerosis or hardening of the arteries. And they it's it would be also be rare that you don't know somebody who hasn't personally been affected by one if or two or if not all three of those types of scenarios. So what we hopefully we'll talk about a little bit in the next a few minutes is just sort of, well, what is it? Why do we have it? If it's so bad, why did our evolution, why did God say you need cholesterol in your body? It's like, if it causes all these problems. So, well, just a bit of aspect of, where does it come from? What is it? So it's basically, it's this a lipid. Lipid is a fat. And oh, fat, oh, that's bad. Fat equals bad is the common conception that many people have. And of course, that all started in the, I would say, in the 1950s. Interestingly, it started in the 1950s because at the time, the lobby in the government was between the sugar industry and the fat industry. And it had already been recognized in the 1950s that there was, starting to be increased types of health problems, namely heart disease, which, by the way, in 1900 was not something that was talked about very much because people didn't seem to die heart attacks. And it wasn't because they died at 30 years old. They certainly had cholesterol. In fact, they've had cholesterol since we've been on the earth, for reasons we'll mention in a sec. So anyway, it became a big lobby that somebody had to say what was the cause of this, these increased number of incidences that they were seeing of heart disease in general. So believe it or not, political as it is, the sugar lobby was more powerful than the lipid lobby. And so even though it was felt that sugar, and this was admitted probably 5 or 10 years ago, the lobbyists said, yeah, it's actually fat wasn't the problem back in the 50s. It's always been sugar that was the issue. And so everybody sort of switched from eating butter to suddenly you had to eat margarine. And in fact, I remember as a kid, my mom would buy this pack of white margarine, and there was a yellow food coloring that you had to bust, and then you would knead this thing to make it look like it was butter. So that was the big deal. So this was big, and so it's carried on for the last 70 years. Except now we're starting to become a little more savvy that really is fat really what the problem is in general. So cholesterol is a substance, and why is it, if it's so bad, why do we have it? Well, we have it because it's actually a building block. It's actually a substance that is absolutely essential for life. If you had no cholesterol, you actually wouldn't be able to survive. It's a substance that is made in your liver on an ongoing basis. In fact, we believe about 80% of your total cholesterol, which I'm sure all had your labs tested. And if your cholesterol, sorry, I'm going to use American numbers without talking about the Canadian numbers because you have a different system in Canada. So in the United States, if your cholesterol, total cholesterol is over 200 and your LDL cholesterol is over 100, it's considered that that's not good. We have to do something to try and lower your cholesterol. So what's happening now is if we look at, so why do we have cholesterol? Because every single cell in your body, and how many cells do we have? somewhere in the order of 10 to the 13, meaning 13 zeros, 1,000 billion cells in your body. Every one of those cells has cholesterol associated with it because the membrane that holds it all together, keeps the things inside the cell, has a cholesterol wall. It's the building blocks. It's the 2x4s, we'll say, that's in the lipid wall of cells, of cell membranes. It's also necessary to create bile, which we need for digesting fatty foods. It's also necessary. It's a building block for making your hormones. It's also the building block for vitamin D. So we all need cholesterol. So where did all this stuff come from? It's like, oh, well, but it's a problem. We still know that in the Western world, heart disease is the number one cause of death, premature death. And the association is that the reason that the people died is because they have blocked arteries, which in some cases is absolutely true that that's true. But I have had probably equally as number of people who have low cholesterol meaning it's in a normal level, as people who have high cholesterol. So the bottom line will be, it's really, is it the cholesterol that's the problem or not the cholesterol? So, and you know, what typically happens is, and at the end, we'll talk a little bit about, oh, what are you going to do about it? But often the starting point is, oh, you need to look at your diet, which you do need to look at, and you may be eating too many fats. And so for years, there was this idea that if you eat saturated fat meaning butter, coconut, meat, poultry have saturated fats in them, and thinking that that's what basically goes in the cholesterol. Eggs is another one. Oh, you don't eat 6 eggs a week, or shouldn't eat even eggs at all if you have high cholesterol. Well, the reality is, if you had zero cholesterol in your diet, you ate nothing that had any cholesterol in, meaning it's a base 100% plant-based type of a diet, no saturated fats whatsoever, would you have high cholesterol? I can tell you that I have vegan patients who have cholesterols of 250, very plant-based. So it's not only the diet, because once again, I'm saying the liver is making it up. So guess what is the primary organ that you're going to need to support, or one of the primary organs you're going to need to support if you have a lipid issue, which is your liver. And so you already know what I'm going to say about what are you going to do for your liver. It's like, why do we do castor oil packs? What, not just over your liver, but it's over your whole abdomen for your immune system. Your liver has over 500 different processes that it does on an everyday basis. And one of them is basically making cholesterol, making bile, blood sugar. I mean, it goes on and on and on and on. So anyway, we look at the aspect that we say that cholesterol is vital. Absolutely vital for life, because without it, you couldn't make cells, you couldn't make hormones, you can't make bile, you can't make vitamin D, et cetera, et cetera. So we have all these types of things. And so then why do we talk about it? Like, why is it such a big deal from, you know, the conventional model, the American Heart Association, the Canadian Heart Association? Because their idea is that if you have high cholesterol, they associate that with people who basically are more likely to have a heart attack or more likely to have a stroke. Without any doubt, when you look at straight numbers, that seems to be, there's some correlation then. So we need to break it down into what's so-called bad cholesterol and good cholesterol, which is a misnomer, because there's no such thing as a good and bad cholesterol per se. However, you will have it referred to as LDL, low density lipoproteins, LDL, HDL, high density lipoproteins. So we say LDL is bad, HDL is good. So, you know, where is this? This is a lipoprotein in your blood that has a purpose, not only to make hormones and all that kind of thing, but it has a purpose, and it's carried in your blood. And because it's a lipid, it's not water soluble. So it doesn't get dissolved, you know, into the blood itself. And so it's a m molecule that floats around in your blood, but it has an important functions. So think of it like one of the functions is to bring nutrition and needed nutrients to, you know, to the supply, you know, bring to your house, let's say. And then you have the other one that basically carries away the trash. So you need a balance of both this LDL and the HDL. So the LDL is the one that they believe we'll talk about is sort of blocks your arteries. It blocks the ability to, it can plug it, form a clot. That's ultimately what a stroke or a heart attack typically is. You have a decreased blood supply to a specific area because the blood supply has been cut off because of a amount of plaque, we call it, in your artery. That is the real problem. The liver is making most of it, as I said. The rest of it, some of it comes obviously from your food. The number is changing your diet for somebody who has a good diet. Say, well, I eat red meat twice a week. I eat eggs once in a while. That is not going to change your cholesterol number. That's not what the issue is. We have to look. I always look at, well, what's your liver doing most, first of all, and what are we doing to support that in general? So let's talk about this whole idea of LDL, this lipoprotein that travels through your blood. Think of it like being on a little boat and it's being carried around, from place to place to place to place. You're moving. Unfortunately, there's a bunch of flooding and there's always flooding somewhere, but it's been pretty awful in different parts of the US lately. So some boats bring the food and supplies to each town, and then some boats take away the trash, So inside our body, these lipoproteins are delivering cholesterol to your tissue to do whatever it's needing to do. So the LDL, as I said, is considered the bad guy. The HDL is considered the good guy. Ideally, the lower the LDL, the better. The higher the HDL, the better. More or less, that's the most simple way of ultimately looking at it. But both of them are essential for health. Both of them are essential for being in a state of wellness. The lipoproteins are by name are mostly made up of protein. The aspect of we need the protein, we need the liver that ultimately is making it, and it gets transported somewhere. So we have HDL, we have LDL, and we have something called VLDL, very low density lipoproteins. How does this stuff get carried around? I mean, it's too big, it's a big molecule. So then you hear about the word triglycerides. So triglycerides means three. So three of these molecules attached to the stem, and it gets carried around and packed. And it's a convenient way. It's like putting it in a suitcase and carrying it around, as opposed to just everybody, carrying. You go on a trip, and you would have to put one piece of clothing in one bag and another piece in another bag, another piece in another bag. That's like, oh, we'd have too many bags. So in order to get this stuff carried around, we have the idea of triglycerides. And interestingly, triglycerides, people don't pay a whole lot of attention to the triglycerides, although we need to pay attention to them as equally as much as we need to pay attention to, what's happening as far as our lipids are concerned. So why did the body create LDL? And what is its primary purpose? Think of it like this. So, and the other, actually another thing I just thought of, think about this. Where do you find these plaques? And if you think, well, my heart. Well, what's in your heart? Coronary arteries. What's in your body? Arteries. What's the function of arteries? The function of arteries is to carry blood to the tissue. So you have plaque in your arteries. Why do you not have plaque in your veins? We don't talk about plaque in the veins. We only have plaque one place, the arteries. Why? So why do we have LDL? Why isn't the LDL plugging up the veins? It's not something causing varicose veins, by the way, which is a whole different issue about valves and things. So, as the blood is coursing through your arteries, there's a turbulence. And sometimes it can, depending on the turbulence, it can create your blood pressure goes up because you're stressed or whatever happens, and you get this turbulence. And this turbulence can damage what we call the endothelial lining. That's the innermost lining that's in direct contact with the blood. So there's a leak. There's a little break. We need to repair the break. Well, how does the body repair the break? It brings a patch. What's the patch? LDL cholesterol, low density lipoprotein. So over a period of time, and think about it. So it starts to build up. Now think of a river where you're suddenly putting some rocks in the river. What's going to happen as the blood cor the as the water courses past that rock? Is it's a bit of a diversion, is a little more turbulence. So over a period of time, builds up, builds up, builds up, builds up. Oh, it's built up so much. The water is blocked. We have a dam that ultimately happened. So it blocks the artery. That's the whole theory of why LDL is bad, but yet we need LDL to basically survive. Otherwise, when these micro damages would happen inside of our arteries, we basically would, at some point, we would leak. We would lose the blood. They would keep leaking, and you would eventually have some form of a catastrophic illness. Well, okay, so that's what LDL is doing. So that's why it's considered bad, because it's forming plaque. So what's the HDL doing? The HDL is the garbage truck. It's the good stuff. It's carrying the stuff away. It's carrying the trash away from the tissue, back into, into circulation, back into the liver to be processed. Back and the big proteins that can't get through are actually, guess where they go? Surprise, surprise, called lymph system. So your lymph system carries these big molecules, these big protein molecules that don't want to get stuck in our arteries or veins anywhere. So we have a lymphatic system that does that job. So we have a venous system carrying it back. We also have a lymphatic system that's carrying things back. We have these two issues going on. And so, your doctor does a blood test, he measures your total cholesterol. He measures your LDL, he measures your HDL, and he measures your hopefully VLDLs. Now I see it most commonly, it's called non-HDL. It's a combination of both the LDL and the VLDL, added together, those two things in general. And then we have triglycerides, which is this molecule tribing three molecules stuck together, and it basically acts as a suitcase to easily carry stuff through the blood. Cardiologist, your general practitioner, your doctor, your therapist, whatever, will say your lipids are too high. We need to do something about, lowering that particular number, which we'll get to in a sec. So the patient comes in, and it seems that more and more in the last few months, either their doctor has been more aware of that, or has brought it up to them and saying, "Oh, your lipid numbers are too high. We're going to need to do something about that. Maybe you need to lose a little bit of weight. Maybe that'll help. Maybe you need to decrease, stop eating red meat. Maybe that'll help. You shouldn't eat eggs. Maybe that'll help," which I find none of that helps in my patient population anyway, because that's not really what the problem is or what the issue is. Because my conversation is, no, more likely we need to look at what your liver is doing than what you're actually eating, because your diet is, if you come to see a biological doc or a naturopath or a functional doc, they're probably already talking, have talked to you about, hopefully, about something about your food. So before I move on to, and stop for a sec, there's something else that, without making this too complicated, there's something that is part of LDL, and it's called lipoprotein little a, LP little a. LP little a is a genetically inherited lipoprotein that is felt to be a common independent risk factor for heart disease. It's made up of, two major proteins, apolipoprotein A and apolipoprotein B. So ApoA, ApoB. And so those are also something, and depending on your cardiologist, depending on your GP or your functional doc or your naturopath or your biological doc, they may have suggested that you test that. It is genetically, it's the feeling is, it's genetic factors that determine, whether you have high LP little a numbers. There's some evidence that that is indeed a contributing component. It's believed that about 20% of the world's population has these elevated lipoprotein A. So typically people will say measure it once, because it's genetically inherited. But at this point, there's not really much that's being done. Obviously, from our perspective, we do believe there's something that can be done, because it's called epigenetics. So yes, we look at diet, yes, we look at exercise, et cetera, as a component of that. They're trying to figure out some drug that basically will lower that number in this 20% of the population. So it is of some value. So people ask me, should I measure your lipoprotein A? Absolutely. Why not? And so if your number is high, depending on your US or Canada. And here we consider, at least many labs will consider, if it's a higher than 50 milligrams per deciliter, it's high. And in the metric system, I think that's 125 nanomoles per liter. That has a blood clotting inflammatory component that's associated with it. So if you have that and you're one of the 20% of the population that has that, what does it mean? It means you have to be very health conscious for the aspect of, I need to do everything I can to keep my lymph moving, to keep my stress in management, to eat as good as I can, to make sure I drink my water, et cetera, all the things that we've always talked about. It doesn't mean, oh, woe is me, I'm destined to have some form of cardiovascular accident, per se, just because you've inherited from your family tree, high levels of lipoprotein A. And so I haven't talked about what are we going to do about it yet, but I'll stop there for a minute and ask if Julie wants to contribute something, and then we'll go back and, well, what are we going to do about it? Or is there additional types of testing we can do other than a standard blood test?
Yeah, because I'm like, I am not a doctor and I don't play one on social media or on TV. So I'm just like, I'm learning lots of stuff here. It's fascinating and thank you for sharing all that. The only thing I'm like, if I'm gonna like, I'll insert my thing. So I do have clients that are on statin drugs and they, their doctor's like, we need to take care of your cholesterol. A, because my dad is my dad and I know like the things that he's shared before. Like I've talked about, like we do Castrol packs, what are we doing for the lymph? Like all the basic treatment guidelines, like those are the things that is my recommendation first to help support that. But from an emotional level, something that I tend to work on in terms of helping them with their cholesterol is if you are a fan of Louise Hay, cholesterol emotionally is linked to clogging the channels of joy. So joy is a big emotion that many people. If you're not a child, if I ask you, when was the last time you felt joyful or did something joyful? They're like, they look at you like I have three heads. I'm like, what? What is the word joy? And so cholesterol is about the fear of accepting joy and the clogging of joy in the channels. So essentially, like the LDLs and all that kind of stuff, joy can't get into your system. Joy is not passing through your veins and your arteries and your fascia and the lymph. It's just stuck somewhere inside of you. So what I do is I focus on finding joy within you and trying to move it using movement. So one of a movement, since you can't see me, but a movement that we can try to do is simply just even the cake breathing that, for example, that we did today, is you want to bring in. So I like to do what's called a psychosomatic movement snack, which is basically we use an affirmation or we say some words from the mind, and then we do some movement to go along with it. Like my dad said, with the breathing, is that we stand up to try to train the body from a sympathetic and a parasympathetic state. Same idea. What we're trying to do is try to find joy, because a lot of times people will do affirmations and they're like, I don't believe it. You can't, unfortunately, when it comes to this stuff, you can't fake it till you make it. You can't. Like, believe me, I tried. Believe me, I have tried. And so if your nervous system and your belief system, if your perception is like, I do not have joy in my body, well, then you're not going to have joy in your body. So what we're going to do is we're going to try to move your body to try to find it, right? So this is where I like to blend in things. So for example, what you would do is do the cake breathing. So as you're breathing, you could actually just repeat after me and say the affirmation. You can say is, I choose to love life. My channels of joy are wide open. It is safe to receive. So it's really leaning into that feminine side and allowing things to just go with the flow. So if you're someone that really struggles with going with the flow, like I did a few years ago, like, so if you've seen me on Instagram, you're like, this chick likes to dance. And so it's not that I don't like it. It's something that when my trauma coach said, we need help. You need to figure out ways to find your feminine or embody your feminine. I didn't know what that meant. And so part of the process, what I did is I started uncovering myself and started to discover myself through movement and through ways to move my body in ways that it wasn't structured, because I came from a world that movement was very structured. It had to be this way, like very personal training. It's like, this is your form, like shoulders back, everything has to be done one way. And finding my feminine and finding movement that just allowed me to flow was amazing because I did Zumba, but I didn't do very well with it because you had to follow structure, you had to follow the instructor, and I didn't do well. So anyway, so for me it was about finding ways that I can move my body that allowed me to flow and find my joy and find love in my life. So again, the affirmation is I choose love. I choose to love my life. My channels of joy are wide open. It is safe to receive. So if you want to try to bring joy and, or try to support your cholesterol, I invite you to try to find ways to bring joy into your life. Cool. So that's all I wanted to say.
Which is obviously it's great. I mean, that was an excellent insertion into where we're going next with this. So if your doctor has indeed done your lipid levels and given you instructions about what to do, so what I have my patients do is something additional to that, and I say, well, before you unless it's, diet things, but if you have been recommended a statin medication, which many patients have been, and for some people, actually, it's very important that they take that. So we're not saying that, you should never take that, you should never consider that. There's a group of patients who would highly benefit and do highly benefit from taking statin medication. But the reason that this topic seems to have come up because, at least here in Arizona and the Phoenix area, I've had several patients now come in and where their cardiologist has actually done an additional test. We call it a CT calcium score. And what it does, it's a CT picture of their coronary arteries to see whether or not that they have plaque built up in their coronary arteries. And it's rated on a score, 0 to 99, 100 to 300, 301 and up, et cetera, et cetera. So if that number is low, meaning zero, which I've had many patients, it's been zero, they say, well, even if you have a 235 cholesterol and an LDL of 150, from a calcium score perspective, it says you don't really have any plaques in your coronary arteries. So even though you're circulating all this lipoprotein through your body, through your coronary arteries, the likelihood that's going to block anytime soon is probably not going to happen. Not very likely anyway. So that's that. And they have, there's now a standard. If the higher the number, the more more intervention that is typically suggested that be done for the patient. So that's one aspect of things. Another one that is typically now being recommended in addition to that is what's called a carotid IMT, carotid intima media thickness. In other words, it's an ultrasound study of your carotid arteries that is in your neck, and they're also looking for whether or not you have plaque. So the feeling is the combination in your coronary arteries. If you're seeing something, it's probably hard plaque, calcified plaque. Calcified plaque is not perceived to be a problem. It's the so-called soft plaque that can move, that can break off potentially, that could cause an issue. So we have this debate going on. The feeling is that it's the soft plaque that actually is more of a problem. And so, if you have a calcium score of zero, you have no plaque. So it's like, really? But what if you have a calcium score of 300 or 282 or 2000 per se? So I'm going to give you three different scenarios of my own patient population with that, and three different total opinions from cardiologists. Obviously, these three patients had three different cardiologists. So the first one was a shocker to me, was the highest one I had seen, and I don't have it in front of me, but it was in the thousands. I'm going to say 3000 or something like that. It was ridiculously high. It's like I'm thinking, oh my God, anything that is telling me this person has so much buildup in their coronary arteries, they're going to have a heart attack soon. So much, much, much to my surprise, the cardiologist said, oh, he said, I see things three times that high. He said, I would. The patient was 80 years old, 81 years old. So he said, no, he said, I don't think that's that big a deal. I see that those numbers and higher. I said, okay, wow, that's. Even I was shocked on that one. Then I'll have another patient who has seen his cardiologist, did a calcium score, And the calcium score was like 50, which is, still with 0 to 99, putting at the relatively lower risk per se. That particular cardiologist said, yeah, we'll watch it. I don't think it needs any, pharmaceutical intervention at this point in time. There's a little bit there, but you should be mindful of your diet and moving, et cetera, et cetera. And then I had another patient who actually just in the last few weeks had to get a calcium score, and her calcium score was zero. And it's like, but the cardiologist said, well, even though it's zero, because your cholesterol was 250 or whatever it was, you need to be taking a statin medication. And so the patient said, yeah, but my calcium score says, he says, oh yeah, but no matter what that calcium score says, your cholesterol is too high and you're bound to have an accident someday. So we have three different total opinions from three different cardiologists about what the intervention should be. So from the perspective of, one individual has to make the decision about should I take a statin or not. Or people will say, red yeast rice, which is for all intents and purposes something very similar to statins as far as what the biochemical reaction is. And so statins have been around now for quite a while. And in fact, I believe it's potentially one of the highest sourcing medications, frequent medications as prescribed to the public in general, with the idea that it's one of the preventive factors that will potentially reduce somebody's risk of having any form of a cardiovascular accident. If you really want to say, is this what I need to do? In addition to just the numbers, find out what your LP little A is. That's another blood test. Ask your doctor to prescribe a CT calcium score, which, I don't know what it'll be in Canada, but here in the United States, insurance probably will not cover it, but it's not that expensive. I think it's under $100 here in the US to do that. And then this carotid ultrasound for intima thickness. You're trying to decide soft plaques, hard plaques, risk factors, et cetera, et cetera. So let's say that the person has been recommended to take a statin. So for my patients, I do all these tests and I say, this is at risk, this is at risk, this is at risk, this is at risk. Should I take it? I say, well, we're not quite done yet because now we need to look at the other factors that are also risk factors for cardiovascular disease. I want to know somebody's ferritin level. The higher your ferritin level, the more likely the risk. I want to know what your white blood cells are. When white blood cells are over 7.5, that's an increased risk. I want to know what your 3-month average of blood sugar is. That's your A1C. Typically, we say over 6.5 is increasing your risk. And so, in addition to knowing what your numbers are, I also want to know what your homocysteine level is. Homocysteine is a product made in the body from the breakdown of B12, B6, and folic acid. If you have high homocysteine levels, there's considered to be an increased risk. I want to look at your fibrinogen levels. So we take all that piece of information. I'm not just looking at LDL. I'm not just looking at total cholesterol. I'm looking at every possible risk factor. And then on top of that, what are you doing for yourself to try and minimize your risks? And of course, we've talked about it every podcast. It's like, what are you doing? Is how are you completing the basic treatment guidelines? And it doesn't mean, 100% of the time, every day, you have to do casserole, you have to do grounding, you have to do nebulizing. The more often you do it, the better it is. Movement is obviously important. Flushing your system out is important. Having your homunculus work is obviously important. They're all important, but it's not like it's all or nothing. If I don't do them, I get no benefit. I do them all, I get benefit. Doing one thing 1% is better than doing nothing 0% because you're still going to get ultimately some benefits. So and we do have other supportive remedies, nutraceuticals, homeopathic remedies, Unda numbers, jumbo therapies, phytogens, et cetera, that are hawthorn is something that as an herbal medicine has been used forever to know that it's supportive of cardiovascular function. So the bottom line is, one of the bottom lines, maybe we're not at the bottom line yet, is in my experience, despite what all those risk factors are, there's one risk factor that I haven't said that is the kicker. It's the 100% of the time that my clinical experience of seeing patients who've had MIs or a stroke, that is the factor. What is the person's stress level? Every single patient that I've seen who ends up with a clot. So what I think happens, yes, you have some modifying risk factors. Yes, you have lipid numbers, lipoprotein numbers that are above the so-called standard numbers. And so is that what's causing the clot? Or is it, in my opinion, it's this, it's stress. What is stress doing? It's constricting your arteries. And so you're getting literally a spasm in your artery. So instead of the artery being open, even though there's some lipids in there, it actually, the opening is now closed. And so the blood can't get through. So we associate that, oh, your arteries are mostly closed because of this spasm. My experience is that stress is the main contributing component to somebody who has a heart attack. So if you ask somebody who's had a heart attack, tell me what was going on in the previous 6 months before you actually had your incident. Dollars to donuts, I would bet you will hear that their stress level was higher than everyday typical things. Something happened in their life, whether it was their job or their family or, just circumstance or situation. They'd say it was significantly heightened, which meant they didn't sleep as much. Their self-care went out the window. They weren't able to do any form of lymphatics. They weren't moving their body as much. Their diet was there is was there, et cetera, et cetera. And now you start to see the domino effect. That is the to me, that's the final trigger, the spasm of the coronary arteries and somebody who has these risk factors that they fall off. So that's why I've seen people with cholesterol numbers of 150. They're on high blood pressure meds. They're on a statin drug. They're on a baby aspirin. All the things that are well commonly prescribed to support that. But what the doctor is not talking about is how are you managing your stress? What are you doing for your stress on an everyday basis? That's where we come in. That's where you can come in for what you can do for yourself, irregardless of what your number is. So don't get all hyped up about the number, but look at all the factors that I've just mentioned. Look at all the things that are possible, but then look in the mirror and say, how am I managing my day-to-day stress? Bottom line, and that's where Julie is the expert and will share some thoughts about that.
Well, thank you for calling me an expert in that. Wow. I feel honored. Yeah, all I was going to say is, what's your HRV score? Straight up. Like, let's find out biologically. Because, I mean, like, again, your perception coming back to it is, if your perception of your stress, if you're like, no, I'm not stressed, and then your HRV is like way lower, well, then we got an imbalance going on, right? So there's so many different ways to check in on your stress levels. So, I mean, if you remember from one of the very first podcasts we did, is like my dad said, get up and breathe for a minute. Just count how many breaths you take in a minute, right? That's going to be a really fantastic way just to check in on you and where you're at, right? Because as we've talked about many times before, most people are breathing probably 12 to 18 times in a minute. If you've been breathing 18 times a minute, or you're that person, you're like, Julie, I can't get a deep breath. I can't do it. What I want you to do right now, we're going to do it right now. Okay. Why not? Because we can. Because I can. Is I want you to place your fingers right underneath your rib cage. Just place them there gently and just go ahead and take a deep breath in. Breathe into those fingers. Feel that tension. And now slowly let it out. Is it tender? If you're stressed, it's going to be tender. Okay, I guarantee it. Bring your rib fingers down a little bit lower on the rib cage. Again, take a deep breath in. Don't press, don't change anything. Just notice and then exhale. Is it tender? Okay, one more time. Bring it down a little bit lower. Last two floating ribs, that right side on that liver. It's doing a lot of work, yo. We've been talking about the cholesterol and all that stuff. Let's see, is it a little tender over there? I don't know. Go ahead and take a deep breath in. And exhale. That is a quick check-in. If you're tender in any of those three points when you exhaled, then that's a sign that you're stressed. Okay? So what we want to be able to do is, how do Julie, how do I undo it? Keep doing it. Keep doing what I just did. What you can do is literally lean over. It's called unstick your diaphragm. Your diaphragm is really sticky, my friend, and that's why you can't get a deep breath. Everything is in a contraction. So what we want to do is get it into expansion. So, and because your head's ruminating and because you're in stress mode, like we know when you're in survival, it's like go, go, go. I'm busy, busy, busy. Let's come into the moment right now and unstick that diaphragm so that we can get the oxygen flowing, so that we can move the lymph a little bit, so we can give a little support to those molecules moving in our body. Give the triglycerides a little, like, little support, right? We're in for support. So this is a simple way that you can do that. So that's all I have to. I really don't know much about cholesterol, but I certainly know how to move the body. And that is one way you can move it. And I'm pretty sure, and then next thing you do, castor oil pack, simple thing, Epsom salts bath, because salt, magnesium, fantastic way to offload some of that stress. So I actually am reading a new book called Emotional Detox, and the number one thing right out of the gate, I think it's like chapter two, she's like, the number one way to help you unblock emotions. So if you can't find joy, if you're struggling to find joy, one way to start unblocking that, because it's somewhere in your body. I'm gonna tell you right now, if you're like, I don't know where joy is in my body, it's somewhere in you. It's somewhere in there. And taking Epsom salts bath was her number one recommendation, because salt, it's like when you go to the sea, you want anybody go to the ocean? You go in the ocean and then you feel like lighter, right? It's the salt. The salt moves things, it unblocks things. So just something that I'm not a bath person myself, so that's why I was like, maybe I'll do like a hand or a foot soak, but yeah, I don't know, getting a hot tub with some cool salt, whatever. I'm not, that's not me, but I'll do my hands and feet. I'm sidetracking, but anyway, that's all I had to say. Do you have anything else to share on this topic?
Yeah, just one thing that for those of you who, by necessity or a family member or a loved one who is actually taking statins, just a reminder that one of the absolute essential components that you need to be doing if you're taking a statin is to also be taking coenzyme Q10. Coenzyme Q10 is broken down or prevented from acting, and it's an incredibly important nutrient as far as energy production is concerned. So, in fact, when the original statin drug was patented, it was patented in combination with coenzyme Q10 as part of the actual the drug included coenzyme Q10 as and that's what the studies were done with, showing that that's how you could minimize the breakdown and loss of CoQ10. But interesting to say, well, why isn't it now? Because the drug companies marketing it refused to sell a product that also had a nutrient associated with it, said, we're not selling nutrients, we're selling drugs. So they took it out. And so you don't see it combined, even though the original studies were done with that. The other thing that's important about somebody taking a statin is to monitor how you're feeling. There are a pretty long list of pretty nasty adverse effects. I don't call them side effects because they're the effects of the drug. They're not a side effect. That's what the drug is supposed to be doing. So they come back, your liver enzymes are high. One of the more common ones is cramping, breakdown of your muscles. Rhabdomyolysis is the fancy name for it. But whether it's dizziness or abdominal pain or neuropathy or low platelets or depression or irritability and short temper or diarrhea or constipation or loss of mental acuity, kidney failure, it's like, whoa, these are pretty heavy duty. And people say, oh, well, it doesn't happen very often. If you're the one it happens to, it's a big deal. So I would say I equally have had, which is why they're coming to see me, of course, people who were on statins and cannot take statins because the adverse effect was pretty nasty per se, and that they still have this concern about, oh, what about my, I can't lower my cholesterol. But lowering your cholesterol number does not necessarily mean you have less risk without looking at all your other factors. So as we said a minute ago, the aspect of how are you managing your stress, how are you trying to minimize spasm in your arteries? And remember, think about that. It's not in your veins, it's only in your arteries, which is a curiosity in the body. We don't talk about cleaning out your veins, we talk about cleaning out your arteries. in general for everything that I explained earlier in this podcast. If you take a statin, take enzyme Q10. If you have high risk factors, do everything that we've said on every podcast up to this point, which whatever number we're at, 45 or however many we've done. We've been doing this for a few years, so we've done a few of these things over a period of time. So that said, I hope, this little podcast was of some information, change some of the myths that perhaps are associated with it, and some of the clinical experiences that I've had, especially the ones that I said, three different cardiologists, three totally different opinions on the result of a CT calcium score. Do your own homework, feel comfortable about it. Don't be afraid of it. Just do what you need to do to try and optimize your quality of life on an everyday basis. Don't wait until it's broken to try and fix it. We're working on optimizing things on an everyday basis. Health isn't something that you have and then don't have. Health is something that's slow. It's like an ice cube. You put an ice cube in the glass, and you think, oh, that's cooling off my beverage, per se. And then you look at it and say, where'd the ice cube go? That's kind of what health is. We don't pay attention. We don't pay attention. We don't pay attention. And suddenly something catastrophic happens. Oh my God, I better pay attention. Obviously, this podcast is more about not waiting until it's broken, but what kind of things can we continue to help you with? So as a result of that, send us your questions, send us your concern, ask us about things. We just like to talk. Julie and I have a good time doing this, having a conversation. And much of the feedback that I get is like, God, this your thing's a lot of fun. It's like, I know. It's like when you don't prepare things and just talk, it's that it's just whatever comes out, comes out. And that's the best aspect of this whole thing. So that's all I have to say today.
Well, a big thing for me is, I mean, a lot of people ask me, like, oh, you have a podcast? Yep. It's just time for me to spend my dad. I'm like, it's our bonding time, right? So this is where, I know it's kind of a weird way for some people to be like, that's how you spend time with your dad. Well, he lives like however many miles away, so why not? He's a smart
It's
man.
only 3,000 miles away.
It's only 3,000 miles, right? But technology allows us to have a conversation and share things that we have similar, like we have these similar things. Who knew? Well, we did, but it's funny because when we're together as a family at Christmas, we don't talk about this stuff. So it's like, this is our place. So we're happy to share with, we have learned with all of you. So thank you so much for listening. Thank you for supporting us. Like my dad said, if you have questions, please send them in because this is like, these things are, they're for you just as much as it is for us because like it keeps us on our toes and to know what the latest research is. Like my dad's always, there's always another, I'm sure, another article that's popping into his inbox. Oh, did you hear about this? There's always stuff happening. So anyway, we're happy to share our two cents and thank you so much for being here. And so next time we're actually going to be diving into the world of sleep apnea because I know a few people in North America struggle with sleep apnea. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. And again, thank you so much for being here and supporting us. And we will talk to you next time.
Talk again.
We want to remind you that knowledge isn't power. Applied knowledge is power, where knowledge turns to experience. We encourage you to implement the information shared, allowing you to shift your health and energy. And if this is your first time listening, we truly appreciate you being here and would love to have your support by subscribing to our channel. We also love hearing from you, so please connect with us and share your thoughts. And if you have any ideas for future podcasts, please let us know. If you're interested in learning more about biological medicine or trauma-informed movement, check out the show notes. Thanks again for listening, and we look forward to connecting with you in the future.